Okay, welcome to Shir Rabbeinu B'chayi, Parshas Vayera. A bunch of Rabbeinu B'chayis tonight. I hope we're able to get through all of them, but all very, very geschmack, very, very enjoyable passages in the Rabbeinu B'chayi. So, first to start with a very interesting Rabbeinu B'chayi right from the beginning, Perek Yudches Pasuk Aleph. Vayera Elov Hashem Ve'elone Mamre. God appeared to Avraham Avinu be'elone mamre. What's elone mamre? So it's the Mefarshim differ over how to translate the word elone. Right, Rashi translates it as the plane of mamre, but alonim in Hebrew are a reference to a certain type of tree, terebinths. Right, and the Rabbeinu B'chayi assumes that that's correct. In his discussion about, you know, on this pasuk, he mentions that Hashchina nigleis leNeviim be'esh beruach b'mayim uva'aretz. God reveals Himself to the Neviim through all different types of media, through the four different elements: fire, wind, water, and earth. And here he writes, v'kan nigle la'avram be'ilon. Here it says ve'elone mamre, because elone means a certain type of tree, and it was not by accident that that's mentioned here in the pasuk. God revealed Himself to Avraham Avinu through the tree. Now you say, what does the tree have to do with this revelation to Avraham Avinu? So he writes, lama niglo l'Avraham ve'ilon. Because what's the whole focus of the Nevuah, which is the opening story in Parshas Vayera? The Malachim come to Avraham Avinu, and of course the Malachim tell Avraham Avinu that Sarah is going to give birth to a child in her old age, and obviously in Avraham Avinu's old age. So in that sense, Avraham Avinu thinks that he and Sarah are like dried out trees. Trees that are incapable of producing fruit. Kodesh Baruch Hu comes and reveals Himself to Avraham Avinu be'ilon to tell him that he still has the vitality of the tree. He's still able to produce the fruit, such that the media through which the medium through which the message is delivered matches the content of the message itself. Very, I'll just read the lashon. Yesh la'etz tikva. When you have a tree, even if you cut down the tree, if you leave the stump, the tree in many cases can regenerate. And its vitality doesn't stop. Even though the tree that goes through, that is subjected to terrible, terrible things, can nonetheless regenerate itself. Avraham Avinu, Sarah Imenu, you're not old, you're not washed out, you're still like the tree that has the ability to produce the fruit. Vayero, I love Hashem, ve'elone mamre. That, you know, the vision attached itself to Avraham Avinu through the tree. That is just beautiful, short insight that he starts off the parasha with.
For fast days.
Eitz Yovesh, right, exactly. The Saris says, the eunuch says, I'm an Eitz Yovesh, I'm a dried out tree. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you're not an Eitz Yovesh. You know, you produce Torah and Mitzvahs. Right? So here, the pre, which is promised to Avraham Avinu, the fruit promised to Avraham Avinu, does that actually have children?
Does a paraffin tree give fruit? I thought paraffin is something you burn. So it's like a sap.
He's alonim. In other words,
So it's meant to sap, like molasses or whatever you use on bottles of syrup.
Right.
Is a fruit tree. So why would God pick a tree that doesn't get fruit?
Right. It's a good question. I don't know. I think from the Rabbeinu B'chayi's perspective, assuming that that's correct, that the alon doesn't give fruit, but I'm not sure that that's correct. We have to. Let's say it was correct. So I guess the idea is, look, a tree is a symbol of vitality, whether the tree in actuality produces fruit or not. Just, it's not getting too technical in terms of the type of tree.
This tree we have a half-inch this tree that you have an avenue, just like you have an avenue on this tree that this back that doesn't give fruit. So just like
Avraham Avinu, right. Now, there's maybe the very fact that the tree doesn't give fruit. Right. Could be. The next passage of Rabbeinu Bachaya I want to look at a little bit more at length. This was a cute Vorspeis, to start off with. It's a very important Rabbeinu Bachaya. It's important, a masterful blend of Dikduk and Kabbalah. And it has very important halacha lemaisa implications as well, right here at the beginning of the parasha. And Perek Yirches Pasuk Gimel, the malachim appear, and the pasuk says, Vayomar, Avram said, Vayomar, Adonai, Imnomot Sosichein Beinecho, Alno Sa'avor Me'alavdecho. There are two ways to translate that pasuk already. The Gemara notes this. And the question is, of course, the second word of that pasuk, what does that mean? One way to translate it is Adokai, God. Avraham Avinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, please don't leave. In other words, Avraham Avinu was in the midst of talking to God. These three malachim all of a sudden appear. So Avraham Avinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you don't mind, can I put you on hold for a few minutes? Al nasavor me'alavdecha, I'm going to go be machnes orchim. And I'll come back, I'll talk to you later. And of course that prompts the famous statement of Chazal, Gedola Hachnasas Archim, Yosem Mikabalas Pnei Ashkinov. If Avraham Avinu could put God on hold, so to speak, to be Machnas Areyach, clearly you see the greatness of being Machnas Archim. Alternatively, however, perhaps that word, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, is not a reference to God at all. It's Avraham Avinu speaking to the Malachim, my masters, in the secular or the mundane sense of the term. He runs to them and he says, my masters, please don't leave. Please come and stay with me and I'll feed you. Again, the Gemara itself talks about the two different ways to read this word, whether it's kodesh or chol. So let's take a look at this Rabbeinu Bachaya. Vayomar al derech hapshat Koras Kulam Adonim. The word Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is plural. My masters. So the pshat is that he referred to all of them as my masters. Right? It's not Adoni. Right? It's the plural. V'yomar lo gadol shebohem im nomav sasichein beinecho. Even though the continuation of that pasuk is in the singular, if I have found favor in your eyes, singular. So it means he addresses all of them initially, my lords, my masters, and then he turns to the Gadol Shebohem, the greatest among them, and he addresses him directly. The Tam Heyos Hashem Azek Komutz Kishuhu Kodesh Yoduahu. It's an interesting thing, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya. Whenever we find the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud used as a Shem Hashem, the vowel under the Nun is always a komatz. Why is it Adokoi? So you say, well, that's the way it is. No, not necessarily, because you go a little bit further in this very same parsha when the Malachim show up by Lot. And Lot addresses them as my masters. Perek Yutes Pasuk Beis Vayomer Hineno Adonai with the Pasach. And there Chazal are unanimous that Lot was just addressing the Malachim as my masters. He wasn't speaking to God in any way. Why is it when it's Chol it's Adonai, and when it's Kodesh it's with the Komos? Why the Komos? So the Rabbeinu Bachaya launches into a whole discussion of Dikduk. Let me tell you something about the wisdom that's inherent in the Nekudos, in the system of vocalization that we have in Hebrew. There are seven vowel sounds, and the first and the most important of all of them is the Komos. You thought that the vowels were, not arranged in any particular order. Not so. The komatz is the first of the nekudos. When we start learning as children, comets aleph ah, ah ba ga da, right? It's not coincidental that the comets goes first. What are the shiva tenuos? Yeah. What's that? You get the he doesn't say that explicitly that they're from Sinai, but he's going to make such a big deal about the shapes and the order that I think the Rabbeinu B'chaya at least held that the not just the types of nekudos, but even the formation of the nekudos is Yisodo B'Harei Kodesh, and it goes back to a very, very holy place. What are the Shiva Tznuos? Shehem Kamot Pasoch Tzeire Sego Cholom Shuruk Chirik. The Torah is built on the basis of these seven vowels. These are the seven vowel sounds. O Shiva Kolos. Sha'alehem Omar David b'mizmor shomatin Torah. Shiva Kolos. If you look, says the Netziv, if you look in Kapitel Choftes, in Tehillim, which we say every Friday night, Mizmor le David, Havul Hashem b'nei Elim, Havul Hashem kavod v'oz. If you look in that chapter of Tehillim, there are seven times where the idea of Kol Hashem is mentioned. Kol Hashem al Amoyim, Kol Hashem b'Kolach, Kol Hashem b'Hodar. So Chazal say that the seven Kol Hashems in that capital Tehillim are the basis on which Chazal created seven brachas in the Shmonesrei of Shabbos, right? But there's a greater significance to that as well. That Kapitel Tehillim is associated by Chazal with Matan Torah. When we talk about the seven kolos, the seven sounds that are in that Kapitel Tehillim, those are the seven sounds that are revealed in Matan Torah. Kol Hashem Bakach, Kol Hashem Behodar, right? That whole Kapitel is describing Matan Torah. What are those Shiva kolos? What's the significance of Shiva Kolos by Matan Torah? So the Rabbeinu B'chaya says beautifully, that refers to the seven vowel sounds. These seven vowel sounds, to go back to Rabbi Rubin's point from before, these seven vowel sounds accompanied Matan Torah and presumably were revealed by Matan Torah. L'fisha kol ha-Torah miyusedes aleihem. Hear that lashon. The entire Torah is based on these seven vowel sounds. You thought they were just stam nekudos. They're not stam nekudos. That's what's meant by the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, where the Medrash there says that the Torah was given b'shiva kolos, with seven different sounds. What are the seven different sounds? The seven vowel sounds. V'aleim Omar Shlomo chotzvo amudeha shiva. Again, amazing. The Pasuk in Mishle says that chokhmah, that wisdom, that Torah has hewed out its seven pillars. What are the seven pillars of Torah? The seven vowel sounds, says Rabbeinu B'chaya. Ki heim ha'amudim asher kol habayis nachon aleihem. The entire house of Torah rests on the seven pillars of the vowel sounds. Wow, he's really an advocate for vowels. V'hefrish ben komos l'pasach eino elo b'nekuda. And consider the following, says Rabbeinu B'chaya. What's the difference between, just in the visual form of a komatz versus a pasach? It's a single dot. The pasach is a line. The komatz is a line with a dot underneath the line. Right? Again, it depends how you... If you look at different sidurim, so it's actually done differently in different places. I think if you look in the Koran, if I'm not mistaken, the Koran actually has it this way. I think based on the Rabbeinu B'chaya, it's a line and then a dot which is attached to the line underneath. Right? Again, many of us were taught to make it kind of like another line underneath, but he's saying no. It's a nekuda. It's davka nekuda. Even if you make it as a line, it's still his basic point. His point is that the difference between a komatz and a pasach visually is almost non-existent. It's a little line, a little dot, whatever it is. What's that? Kimailos hakomatz eino elo b'tzuras hanekuda, because it's only a little dot that's the difference between a komatz and a pasach. The hanekuda romaz l'nekudas hamitzios. This nekuda hints at the at the point of existence itself, which is the Heichal HaKodesh, the holy sanctuary, right in the middle of things, which is compared to a Nakuda. I will not pretend that I understand that last line which I read to you, but what it could mean, right, there's the Ramban at the beginning of Chumash Bereishis, which the Rabbeinu Bechai picks up on, that all of existence starts with a Nakuda, with a dot, with a point, and then expands out from that. Perhaps that's the Nekudas HaMetzius which he's referring to. In other words, the very existence of the entire universe is a dot. So that Kamatz has a dot that gives it a mila, a leg up, so to speak, over the Pasach. The Alkein HaNekudah Mishamesa Shul Shiva Ponim. There are amazing things you can do with this Nekuda. This one little dot can make the difference between one vowel sound and another. When you take a vav and you put a little dot on top of the vav, it becomes an O. You just made it into a vowel. The shuruk. In the middle of the vav, you just made it into an U sound. You made it into another vowel. You can make a pasach into a kamatz by this dot. And if you take a chirik, an E sound, and you just add a little dot next to the E, you make it into a tzere. Look at the power of a dot, says Rabbeinu Bechaye. V'im b'tzere sego. Vach shekivanto. You can take a tzere and make it into a sego with an extra dot. V'im b'shva, if you take a shva, which is two dots, yoshuv kubutz svosayim. It becomes a kubutz, which is a u sound. You have the u sound underneath the letter. Harizayim. So in other words, there's seven things you can do with this little dot. Don't underestimate the dot. Rabbi Rubin's about to tell the story with the email.
What?
You're about to tell the story with the email?
No, okay.
The Pintel Yid. Oh, okay, good. Baruch Hashem. .com, right? Don't underestimate the .com, right? V'od v'os yosat smon. And even in the letters themselves. In titen anakudu v'os hei yoshuv ches. You can take a hay and make it into a ches by virtue of a dot. This implies, l'chor, by the way, that a dot doesn't necessarily mean a dot. It could mean a little line, because how would you make a hay into a ches? You would fill in the space, probably not so much with a dot, with a little line, you know, more so than anything else. But okay, you know, he's using them somewhat interchangeably. You can make a vav into a zayin with a little dot. You know, you just draw the line down, you know, from the top. V'chaf yoshuv beis. You can make a chaf into a beis. Vim benon yashuv gimel, a nun can be a gimel with a dot. Vim bereish yashuv dalet, a reish can be a dalet. Luchach hamosif nekuda agara machriz es ha'olam, and it's for that reason that we should know that a dot can make all of the difference. The dot can either build the world or destroy the world. We see the dot can make all the difference between vowels and even between the consonants themselves. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Right. The difference in chometz and matzah is that one dot. But exactly. The apple piece of mirror that has a comment for a pasach, a cold over echad, a tnua achas. Even though ostensibly you would think that a comment and a pasach are all basically the same thing, that they make basically the same sound, and they're all pretty much the same. Ein hadover king. It's not true. There's a difference between a comment and a pasach. She is hefresh benam benivta. There's a little difference in pronunciation between the comment and the pasach. Because the sound made by the komatz is a higher sound, and the sound of the pasach is lower down, right, in terms of importance. Here comes the point where diktuk is not just diktuk. A komatz in a word points to the fact that the subject which the word describes is on a very high level. The aldavar shu omed bifnei atzmo eino nismach leacher, and it indicates something which is independent and not dependent on anything else. So he goes on to give a couple of diktuk examples of this. Ke'inyan aron shu bekomotz, right? The aron, the ark. If you're spelling the word aron by itself, it's with a kamatz. But if you want to say the aron habris, right? The Ark of the Covenant, again in Hebrew we call that a nismach, a possessive, right? Whenever something is a possessive, the komatz becomes a pasach. Matzinu aron habris shu bepasach. V'chein, another example, hine anochi sholeach malach shu bekomatz. A malach by itself has a komatz at the end, but umalach habris hu bepasach. The angel of the covenant, again the possessive, where the word is tied to something else, is dependent on something else, that gets the pasach. Ki a pasach l'smach la'olam l'mash la'acharav, because the pasach grammatically always indicates that the word is dependent on something else, and that's not just a grammatical fact, says the Rabbeinu B'chaye, that's intrinsically, the pasach indicates dependency, the komatz indicates independence. Lo kein hakomatz shehu omei bifnei atzmo. The komatz stands by itself. And then he goes on to make the following observation. Again, if you like grammar, you'll appreciate this. Mitam zeh kol esnachta v'sof pasuk hu bekomatz. That's why, by an esnachta, the halfway point in a pasuk, right, or a sof pasuk, the end of a pasuk, we find that a pasach typically turns into a komatz. Mayim, right? Mayim at the end of a pasuk becomes moyim, right? So why is it that mayim becomes moyim? Because says the Rabbeinu B'chaye, the end of a pasuk or the middle of a pasuk in a snachta is where you stop, and there's this sense of finality and independence that you're not dependent on the next word. You've come to a full stop. Coming to a full stop indicates that idea of being not dependent on anything that's directly around you. That's why. Kisham omeid lo yasmich. You're not dependent on anything else. Umitam zeh benikud zeh hashem lo timtza pasach ela komatz. So once you understand this, that komatz is all about independence and not being dependent on anything else, that's why the Shem Hashem has to be spelled with a komatz. That's why the very same word, when it's not the Shem Hashem, Adonai, my masters, of course, would be with the Pasach. Because human masters, even masters, are dependent on somebody else. But the ultimate master, the Melech Malchei HaMelachim, isn't dependent on anyone or anything. So God, as the master, my master, is with a komatz. That komatz indicates God's total independence of everything else in the world.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, so Avraham has komatzim also because of his independence as well, right? Interesting. What's that? Right. Right. So is he had an independent spirit even before he became the Avraham. Interesting. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe you could go with that.
You say a patach is snichut.
Right.
So then Adonai is Adonai shell. So how does it take away from God? Why would the komatz independent and the patach not independent? It refers to God.
Right. So let me read a little bit further. Rabbi Bachai, he elaborates on this point. So hopefully that will help explain. Right? That's why you only find God as described with the komatz. Ki hamaylo ha'elyona ha'gedola ha'more elyonos, right? Because that which speaks of the supremacy and the uniqueness of God, shehu bilti nismach la'acher kedover hanivro, he can't be attached to anything else. Right? In other words, nothing else, certainly God can't say that he's dependent upon anything else, or we can't say about God that he's dependent upon anything else, and even to relate him to anything else is in a sense to degrade him. He's not, you know, the masters of this one or that one. He's independently the master, right? He, as we say in Davening, Adon Olam Asher Molach B'Terem Kol Yitzir Nivra. He was the master before there was anything else, right? His mastery is not dependent upon the existence of other creations. So that Right? And that's why you find that when the name is written just as chol, as a secular way of saying my masters, it's written with a pasuch, because the human being is subservient to others, but God, as God, is never subservient to anyone else. That's why he is with a kamatz. It's not a little thing, this difference between the kamatz and the pasuch. It's like the difference between darkness and light, and between holiness and that which is not holy. V'chein motzinu sha'amachlif pasach b'komos le'imolit ma'achas mishtayim o yaros ha'kavono o yovel idei kfiro. Right, we see that if you're going to exchange the komos and the pasach with one another, it's going to lead to terrible, terrible things. Milvan. There's another significance to this difference between a komatz and a pasuch. Again, he's on a roll. Od amru od chachmei hadikduk. The grammarians tell us ki hakomatz hu nemar al inyan amiti v'lo kein hapasuch. The komatz is associated with that which is true, and not necessarily the pasuch. And he quotes a fascinating proof to this idea. What's a pasuk from the beginning of Shmuel Beis? Right, the beginning of Shmuel Beis. So Shaul HaMelech was killed at the very end of Shmuel Aleph. How did Shaul HaMelech meet his end? So the psukim at the end of Shmuel Aleph imply that Shaul killed himself. At the very end of Shmuel Aleph, it says, "Vayikach Shaul es acherev, vayipol aleha." Even though Shaul had asked his armor bearer to kill him, you know, because he saw that the war against the Plishtim was not going well, the armor bearer didn't want to kill him, so Shaul pulled out his own sword and he fell upon it. Right? Vayar nose kelev kimei Shaul, vayipol gamhu al charbo vayom osimo. The armor bearer saw that Shaul, his master, had died, right, presumably by his falling on his own sword. So he pulled out his own sword and he fell upon it as well. However, if one looks at the beginning of Shmuel Beis, we find that a Nar Amaleki, an Amaleki young man, comes to David HaMelech after the battle, and he tells him the following story. He says, "I was together." David asks him, "Ech yodata ki mei Shaul v'Yohanan b'no? How do you know that Shaul and Yohanan are dead?" "Vayomar anar amagidlo nikroni kresi lahar Gilboa. I found myself. I was called to Har Gilboa where the battle took place. V'nei Shaul nishon al chaniso. Right? Shaul was leaning on his spear. Vayifin acharav v'yireni." He saw me. He called me. He said to me, "Who are you?" I told him. And Shaul said to me, says the young man, "Amodna alai umos seseni. Stand over me and kill me. Ki achozani hashavos. Because I'm in my death throes. Ki cholo nafshi bi." So says the Amaleki, "Vo'emod alav. I stood over him and I killed him." So the Nar Amaleki describes how he killed Shaul, and now he comes to David. Everybody knows that David and Shaul didn't get along, right? So he figures that by coming to David and telling him that he killed Shaul, he's going to get some kind of reward. Of course, it doesn't really work out that way. David HaMelech says, "You killed the Mashiach Hashem, you killed the anointed one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu." He has the Nar Amaleki put to death. How did Shaul actually die? Did he fall on his own sword? Or did this Nar Amaleki kill him? So Rabbeinu B'chaya assumes that the Nar Amaleki was lying. Right? And it was really a lie that didn't gain him much. You know, not only did he lie, but he ended up killing himself as a result, you know, incriminating himself as a result of this lie. But how do we know that he lied? So says the Rabbeinu B'chaya, Because the word that he uses to describe how he killed Shaul was va'amosiseyu. Now in Diktuk, if you want to talk about something that happened in the past, it should have been va'amosiseyu with a commas. Why does the commas become a pasach? So says Rabbi Bechai again, unbelievably, he says, you know why the commas becomes a pasach? Because commas implies that it's true. And pasach implies that it's not true. So you know that the boy is lying when you analyze the nekudos. You see the nekuda of pasach there, and you know that it just can't be. That's what he says. He says, Omar akosu v'ayimot Allah v'amos aseyu. Vav shel va'amod, va'amod, timsoena ba'kamos, I stood upon him. That uses a kamos. Abo vav shel va'amos aseyu b'pasach. Right? But when he says, I killed him, that was with the pasach. Why? Kimashe omar va'amod olav emes haya. When he says that what? That I stood over him, va'amod olav, that's with the kamos because that was true. The Nair HaMalaki did find Shaul. And obviously he brought back his stuff to show Dofi. But, lo chen va'amos aseyu ki Shaul harag esnafsho. But when he says, I killed him, that's with the pasach, because he was lying, because Shaul killed himself. V'hine kol ze michachmas tarasenu ho'elokis u'lishoneinu ha'kedosha. Don't you see, says the Rabbeinu Bechaye, the incredible wisdom of our godly Torah and our holy language, that you can tell from the nekudos whether something is emes or sheker. Unbelievable, Rabbeinu Bechaye. Yeah. Moral of the story is, know your diktik. If you don't learn your diktik well, it could be deadly. That's what comes out from here. Yeah.
In other words, it should have been was a pasach.
Right.
Should have been an all that was real.
Right. Based on the laws of diktik, and I killed him, it should have been a kamatz. Since it was a pasach, the comments would have indicated that it really happened. The pasach.
The difference between a truth and a lie, truth stands on its own.
Oh, so
the pasach is dependent.
Kvaldik. Right. So that the two things tied together. The Rabbeinu Bechaye made two, as David mentions, the Rabbeinu Bechaye made two assertions about the difference between comments and a pasach. Comments is independent. Pasach is dependent. Comments is true. Pasach is not true. They're not two separate ideas. Truth stands independently. Lies are always dependent on others and other factors, and ultimately when you pull away those other things, the lies collapse. Right? As the Gemara itself says, that kushtakoi shikra lokoi, right? Truth stands. You look at the letters of Emes, right? Again, famous of the Gemara, it says, the letters of Emes all have a platform at the bottom. They're all flat. The three letters of Sheker, the Shin, the Kuf, and the Resh, they all stand on a point. They're very wobbly, right? They're not established well, because Sheker falls over at the slightest push that will knock them over.
Another milk hears him say a comment, and he hears him say a pasta. So does the point of the Rebbe Chai, should have been fine, should have killed him.
Right, so the Shaila is Rabbeinu Bechaye. In Rabbeinu Bechaye, this very beautiful pshat. Is he saying that the Nair HaMalaki actually said, you know, the word with a pasach? Well, that would be a pretty stupid lie. You know, let me lie, but let me lie in such a way that if you know diktuk, you'll figure out that I'm lying. That's not a very good way to lie. I think what the Rabbeinu Bechaye is saying, that the Navi, in recounting the story, is punctuating his words in such a way so that the discerning reader will be able to figure out that it's a lie. You know, the Nair HaMalaki, when he said it, Ki'ilu, he actually did it, right? In other words, that, you know, what's that? Yeah, again, it doesn't matter, because in other words, you know, the Navi is telling the story. So the Navi is telling. I don't know that this is a direct quote from the Nair HaMalaki. The Navi is telling the story in such a way so that when you read the story, reading between the lines, you can already see that there's a falsehood here. Right? Again, I don't know that the Nair HaMalaki first chazed over the Rabbeinu Bechaye and then came before David HaMelech, you know, and said it over in such a way that it's a pasach. The Navi gives it to us with a pasach as opposed to a comma. So we understand when we read it, that it's a sheker.
So again, when MS is the word sheker, all half, all seggles. How are we going to find in this game that?
I don't know.
Sheker.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess segel he hasn't gotten to yet. We're still working on oh and ah.
Okay.
Right?
Say a Shabbos, a Shabbat. Is there a.
Okay, so let right. Okay. So let's talk about this for a moment, right? So this fascinating interpretation of the Rabbeinu Bechayi again, that you know, a Komos and a Pasach are not just two, you know, they're not just similar to one another. There's a world of difference between the Komos and the Pasach, and that expresses itself in saying the Shem Hashem with a Komos, and that the difference between a Komos and a Pasach ultimately, you know, shows us the truth. Right, of what happened with the death of Shaul. So then that gives rise to a very important halachic question. Right, we know that Ashkenazim, and by the way, Teimonim as well, distinguish very distinctly between a Komos and a Pasach. Right, again, it's important to note, it's not just Ashkenazim, but the Teimani world as well, the Teimanim who probably have the most, the Yemenites who probably have the most authentic and ancient pronunciation of the Hebrew language, right? It's well preserved. So their komos is an Ashkenazi komos. They say, oh, you know, even though we would traditionally associate the Teimanim with the Sfaradim, right? They come from that part of the world, but they say an oh the same way the Ashkenazim say an oh. In the Sfaradi world, as we right, in the Sfaradi world, as we know, the distinction between a Komos and a Pasach is almost non-existent, and perhaps more than almost non-existent, perhaps it's non-existent. Doesn't this Rabbeinu Bechaye seem to indicate that, you know, the truth of the Ashkenazi / Teimani position, that there has to be a real difference in Mivtah, in pronunciation, between a Komos and a Pasach? So some poskim argue that that's true based on this Rabbeinu Bechaye. As Rabbeinu Bechaye is taking such pains to tell us the difference between a Komos and a Pasach, must be that, you know, in pronunciation it makes a big deal. And for that reason, there are those Rabbanim who will say that even, let's say, Sfaradim, or even those Ashkenazim who have adopted the modern Israeli pronunciation of Hebrew, which is sort of quasi-Sfaradic, whatever you want to call it exactly, when it comes to the Shem Hashem, you should be careful to say Adokoi, and not Adokai, right? Because that difference, again, the Rabbeinu Bechaye is saying the difference between Noi and Nai is a world of difference. Rav Avadi Yosef, we should mention him during the Shloshim, Zeche Tzadik Livracha, has a tshuva where he shockingly defends the Sfaradim. It's a big plea, right? But Rav Avadi Yosef in this tshuva says, no, you can't bring me a raya from this Rabbeinu Bechaye that the Sfaradim are wrong to basically have the Komos and the Pasach similar or identical to one another. In fact, Adarabba, if you read the Rabbeinu Bechaye carefully, it's clear that Rabbeinu Bechaye himself held that in pronunciation, the Komos and the Pasach are virtually the same, if not the same. How so? This is the lashon of Rabbeinu Bechaye. The afal pi shenira Shakomos vaPasach hakol dover echad tznua achas ein adover kein elishyesh hefresh beneim b'mivta. That's in the Shevel edition. It's towards the bottom, page Kuf Samiches. Rabbeinu Bechaye says even though it would seem that there's no real difference between the Komos and the Pasach, and they're all the same thing, and they're all really the same sound, it's not true. There is a difference in pronunciation between the two of them. So says Rav Ovadia, you know, if the Rabbeinu Bechaye was quote-unquote an Ashkenazi, he wouldn't have to make this point. You know, there's a difference between the Komos and the Pasach, even though they seem to be basically the same sound. What do you mean they seem to be basically the same sound? They sound very different from one another, right? Elamai, it's mashma for Rabbeinu Bechaye that he, you know, he really was a Sfaradi, which again he was. He lived in Spain. He really was a Sfaradi, right? But in other words, he pronounced the Hebrew language like a Sfaradi, because since the Rabbeinu Bechaye has to take pains to tell you that even though the Komos and the Pasach you think are pretty much the same thing, you should know there is a difference between the two of them. It's mashma that the difference in pronunciation was almost non-existent between the two of them. And Rav Avadia goes on to say, you should know that among the Sfaradim, I'm a Dax the Kim, you know, those Sfaradim were really careful, there's epis, you know, some very subtle distinction between the Komos and the Pasach, even among the Sfaradim. again, not as pronounced as the difference that we have, where it's an ah versus an ah, but a real Sfaradi, you know, there is a degree of nuanced difference between the comments and the Pasach. But again, if anything, Rabbeinu Bechaye is the proof that fundamentally the two tenuos are pronounced more or less the same. You know, you can't, if anything, it's a proof to the Sardin, not a proof to the Ashkenazim, that you bring from this Rabbeinu Bechaye.
So how does it
start
then, they
will say Ado Koi?
With the comments? So that particular word, not
what do Sfaradim do today? Most Sfaradim say it I. Most Sfaradim say it I. You know, without really a difference in pronunciation. Right. But again, the back and forth in this Rabbeinu Bechaye again has major halachic implications just in terms of the proper pronunciation of the Hebrew language. Yes.
So I would never ever say oi in any word. Always
word. Again, so Rav Avadia is claiming that the real Sfaradim have epis a little bit of a different pronunciation of the kamatz, but don't ask me to demonstrate what the difference would be between a kamatz and a pasach.
So they teach their children, right? They're a kamatz aleph, or they don't do that, they
kamatz aleph, ah. Kamatz, right. Yeah, right. I have it on good authority. I mean, I found this shocking, but you know, apparently the Sfarim don't even know Afin Pripinchik. You know, I mean, it's they bechlau. You know, I've heard that they don't even use Yiddish. I find it hard to believe, but you know, that's what I have on good authority, that they don't even know that song. You know,
so
what? Oh, okay. Yeah. In other words, the standard Sfaradi, you know, we can bring in a Sfaradi for show and tell, you know, if need be. But no, so in other words, they have a kamatz, meaning, I mean, you know, in the Chumash they print the kamatz, but in the same way that we don't distinguish between an ayin and an aleph, right? Or we don't distinguish between a chirik with a yud, a chirik without a yud. Right, so they don't distinguish between a kamatz and a pasuch. Right, in other words, you know, that's again the typical Sfaradim. That's how they do. The ches sounds that way. The ches is a guttural ches. Yeah. The ches is in the back of the throat. You know, as opposed to being like a bach. You know, kind of sound. Okay, so that's this very interesting, again, unique Rabbeinu Bechaye in terms of the Nekudas. Another fascinating Rabbeinu Bechaye, where he just focuses on the letters of the Hebrew Aleph base and just brings out these insights, which are just, you know, you skip over them. You think a letter is a letter, a vowel is a vowel. If you take a look at Perek Yudches Pasuk Hey, So Avraham Avinu is welcoming in the Malachim, and he says, "Vo'ekcho fas lechem v'sa'adu libchem." I will take, you know, some bread, and you can satiate libchem. You can satiate your hearts. You know, in other words, eat to your heart's content, right? So says the Rabbeinu Bechaye, "V'sa'adu libchem." Mikan yesh lilmod smach v'sa'ad shehikir bohem malachus. Did Avraham Avinu know that these three Arabs were Malachim? Right? It's not immediately clear. Certainly not until they start giving basuras about what's going to happen with Sarai Menu and the like. From the get-go, did he realize that they were Malachim? So says Rabbeinu Bechaye, yes, and I can prove it to you that he knew that they were Malachim, because he says v'sadu libchem, eat to your heart's content. How does that prove that Avraham Avinu knew that they were malachim? So he says, "Afal pi shebo ilo b'dmus anoshim," even though they appeared to him as men, "al kein omar libchem v'lo omar levavchem." He said to them, "Sa'adu libchem," with one base. He didn't say "Sa'adu levavchem," with two bases. What's the difference between libchem and levavchem? We use both, right, in the Tanakh. They both mean your heart. But what's the difference between lev and levav? So he says, If you look at a very similar pasuk in Tehillim, which we say every Rosh Chodesh, right? Sa'adu libchem, bread levav enosh yisod. Bread will satiate the heart of man. But again, there the term is levav with two vases, and it's singular. It's not plural. Right? There's only one heart that the person has. So Zakir Rabbeinu b'chaye, it's not by accident. Lefisha basar v'adam yeshlo beiz levavos yetzer tov yetzer hara. Because every human being really has two hearts within him, the yetzer tov and the yetzer hara. So that's why he has a levav. He doesn't have a lev, right? Avol amalachim ein lohem el lev echad leaviem shebashamayim. But malachim don't have the yetzer hatov and the yetzer hara. They are single-minded. They have a lev, not a levav. Okay, so they pretend to eat. And Avraham Avinu realizes that the malachim is mechabig them, ke'ilu their people. But from the fact that he said v'sadu libchem, as opposed to v'sadu levavchem, we know that Avraham Avinu had them figured out that he knew that they were malachim. Yeah. Right, no, enochinami. So in other words, had they been people, he would have said v'sadu levavchem, meaning it's not shayach, you know, you can't say that the piece of bread is only going to go to the Yesar Tov and not the Yesar Ra. In other words, a human being is described as having a levav, right? Because that is just the very nature of a human being. We have both the Yetzer HaTov and the Yetzer HaRa. But if he's referring to their lev, libchem, just like that, it's clear that he recognizes in them that they only have a Yetzer HaTov. You can't break it up. That's he's assuming. You know, if I give you a piece of bread, so everything. The Yetzer HaRa is not a bad thing. I mean, even though it's called the Yetzer HaRa, the Yetzer HaRa is our drive to accomplish. That's, again, the famous Maimer Chazal, that Chazal captured the Yetzer HaRa for Arayos, and none of the chickens laid eggs. Right? In other words, things happen in this world because of the Yetzer HaRa.
It's also interesting physiologically, like the right side, the right chamber, right, comes blood only to the lungs, gets aerated with oxygen, then goes to the left chamber, and that pumps the blood throughout the whole body.
Right. So in other words, there's a bifurcation, right, even in the one heart that we have. Right.
Malach, I didn't know if Malach had a lev or anything. So it follows God,
it's
like an Evet.
Right, so a lev, remember, you know, lev in Tanakh and Chazal doesn't necessarily mean the heart, you know, in terms of the organ, the heart. Lev means the mind or the mindset. So in other words, you know, the human being has a dualism in his mindset, that the Malach is single-minded, you know, single-focused. Yeah. Right. Okay. So hold on. We'll try to go through some of the examples. He's not done yet. Right. Hine chisarn os habeis lomadnu limdanu kamo inyanim. You should know the beis, the presence of a beis or the absence of a beis is not a little thing. Says Rabbeinu Bechaye. I guess he felt attached to the beis because of Bechaye, right? Otherwise, he'd be Rabbeinu Chaye. V'chein ki sheishes yomim osar Hashem es hashamayim v'esaoretz. Famous pasuk, right? We say it every Shabbos. Kisheshes yomim asa Hashem es hashamayim v'aretz. How do you translate that pasuk? For in 6 days God created heaven and earth. But that's not what the pasuk says. That would be ki bisheshes yomim asa Hashem. Shaldar chapshat hayroish yomar bisheshes. So why does it say kisheshes yomim? V'chisarn os habeiz melamdanu kamo yomos ha'olam. Ki Hashem Yisparach Asa Es Hashemayim Vesaar Sheshes Yomim Klomar Sheshes Alofim Ki Yomo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elef Shonim Shneimar Ki Elef Shonim Veinecho Ki Yom V'Gomer. He quotes an idea which is really an idea from the Ramban. The Ramban mentions this at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim and other places, namely that Sheshes Yomim Asa Hashem Es Hashemayim Vesaar means God created existence to last for 6 days. Not that God made the world in 6 days, of course that's the Pashat of Pshat, But God created the world with a shelf life of 6 days. The world is only going to last 6 days.
No.
The world's only going to last 6 days. How you talking? Right? So remember, a day from God's perspective is 1,000 years. So the shelf life of the world is 6,000 years. Right? That's again what Chazal famously tell us, that you know human existence is divided, is 6,000 years divided three ways: 2,000 years of Tau, 2,000 years of Torah, 2,000 years of Moshiach. Right? How do we know that the world is 6,000 years in duration? From that pasuk, He sheshes yomim asa Hashem sashamayim yasaaretz. God made the world to last 6 days, not in 6 days. Right, the absence of the days teaches us something entirely different. Umizeh tuchal lahavin she'ein os achas batara levatala. Says Rabbi Bechayin, again, this is a theme that's consistent with what he said before about the Nekudos. You see from this brief discussion that there isn't a single letter in the Torah that's extraneous or doesn't belong there. You can't just say, ah, that's just a prefix, ah, that's just a suffix. Every letter counts. And when you see a letter either there when it's not supposed to be there or not there when it's supposed to be there, you've got to start dashing and trying to figure out what it's all about. Aval hakol v'chachma v'ashkacha gemura. Everything is with God's wisdom. V'chein he'id lanu Moshe olav ha'shalom b'sof ha'tara ki lo dover reku mikem. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says at the end of Chumash. The Torah is not empty from you. V'darshu Rabbeinu Seinu Zecharnu Levracha v'im reku. If you think it's empty, if you think it's meaningless, if you don't find the meaning in it, mikem hu reku. It's because of you that, you know, it's, the Torah is perfect. The Torah, every word counts, every nekuda counts. You don't get it, so that's your problem. It's not the Torah's problem. So, and then he goes on to say one more vort. This is a Wednesday night shiur, but this is a Monday day vort. In the shiur shalom for Monday, we say shisu libchem lechela. Right? You know, when we talk about the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, place your hearts, focus your hearts on its might, on the might of Yerushalayim. So, according to everything I said, a human being shouldn't have libo or libchem. It should be shisu livavchem lechela. So how come the pasuk that we say in the Shir Shoyam talks about libchem and not levavchem? No, that's not a kasha. Halohu medaber laosid she'ein shom yetzer hara. That pasuk is talking about the restoration of Yerushalayim laosid lava in the future. And the Yetzer Hara is going to be removed in the future. Now, is the Yetzer Hara going to be removed in the future? Not so pashut, right? The Ramban, who again was such a Baal Hashpa on the Rabbeinu Bechai, holds that way, right? The Ramban writes that the Feirish in Parshas Mitzavim, right, that God is going to remove the Yetzer Hara from us in the times of Moshiach. So Rabbeinu Bechai accepts that idea. Pashtus, it doesn't seem like the Ramban would agree with that idea, but that's a separate issue. The Ramban certainly holds that the Yetzer Hara is going to be removed in Moshiach times. Rabbeinu Bechai accepts that, and that's what he says when the Kapitel Tehillim describes how we're going to be. I don't think so. When the Kapitel Tehillim describes how we're going to be walking around Yerushalayim in the future and paying attention to its chayil, to its strengths. So at that point, it's libchem because the Yetzer Hara is going to be removed. So it's very meduyuk. In other words, the bays, yes it bays, no it bays, everything is really works out. So Rabbi Reuben asked before, what about Esav? Vayomer Esav belibo, yikrubu yivmei evil avi. Right? Vayomer Haman belibo. I hate to say it, but I think Rabbeinu Bechai might say as follows. People like Esav and Haman were single-hearted. They only had the Yetzer Hara. They didn't, right, they had a single, again, they didn't have a Yetzer HaTov at all. Well, Chazal talked about the one, you know, Esav and his wonderful, right, Esav had a wonderful kibbut avim, okay, you know, see, had mitzvahs, but again, at least in certain respects, they were single-minded, right? You know, Haman certainly was the epitome of rishus, and Esav at that point was focused single-mindedly on the extermination of Yaakov. Right, so maybe the missing base over there is to tell you the single-mindedness, but in the other direction.
Can't you see, but they want to show Haman not to turn the base?
Yeah, right, right. So, you know, even from somebody single-minded, it could come out, right? The opposite could come out. Right. Yes, enochinami, but, you know, to a large extent, close to 100%, you know, the Yetzer Hara holds sway over them. The Yetzer HaTov certainly is a relatively small part of their makeup.
Maybe Rav Dovid once told us that years ago that when a person doesn't sin till he's 70, the age takes away the Yetzer Hara. Maybe if the person is sinning so long,
God takes away the Yetzer HaTov. That could be.
Maybe started out with the
Yetzer HaTov. Right. That could be. Right. Those 8, 7, those points, you know, only have a Yetzer Hara. Okay, we have more to talk about, but I think we're going to end up having to save it for Shabbos. So we'll try to stop it in Shabbos one way or another. But Baruch Hashem, the theme of this Rabbeinu B'chai over and over and over again is: pay careful attention to the words, pay careful attention to the osios, pay careful attention even to the nekudos. Kilodava reik mikem, there's nothing that's out of place in the entire Torah.